All lines are now bridged.
Great. Thank you very much, and good morning, everyone, and welcome back to the EHR Reporting Program Task Force. I'm Mike Berry, I'm with ONC, and we are very excited to have you with us today and to get started. We do have some task force members that are traveling, and they will be joining us shortly. And one of our co-chairs, Jill Shoemaker, is at HIMSS presenting now, and she will not be with us today, but will be back next time. But let me start with roll call with our other co-chair, Raj Ratwani.
Good morning.
Zahid Budd. Jim Jurgis. Brian Karras.
I'm here.
Joseph Kunich. Stephen Lane.
I'm here.
Kenneth Mandel.
I'm here.
Abby Sears.
Good morning.
Sasha Termott. Cheryl Turney.
Good morning.
And Stephen Waldron.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning to all, and thank you for joining us again. And I'll now turn it over to our co-chair, Raj Ratwani, to kick us off.
Great. Good morning, everybody. So we're back at it. Appreciate everybody jumping on, especially with a lot happening for everybody in terms of COVID and, of course, the HIMSS conference as well. We do have a lot to cover today, so we're going to jump right in. Just as a reminder, the slides at the beginning of the deck are all boilerplate things that I think everybody should have a good handle on at this point. So I think we can jump straight to slide 9 in the slide deck. And we are going to begin with a discussion of the data quality measures and turn it over to Sasha to drive some of this, if that's okay. And I think Zahid is not quite on yet or may not be joining. Oh, okay. Sasha and Zahid are both out. All right. So we can do kind of a quick recap here and see if there are any additional comments, and we can also pull up the shared document that we've all been working on, and we'll just open it up for feedback at this stage, I think.
Thank you.
Hi, folks. This is Sasha.
Oh, great.
Hey, good morning. This is Zahid. Sorry, I was trying to dial on the phone.
No, no problem. Zahid, Sasha, I'm going to turn it over to you to drive the conversation on these measures. If that works okay.
Yeah, that sounds great. We had a chance to talk through it a little bit between the two of us, and looking forward to the group discussion. I think the Urban Institute folks have some slides to overview the proposal, right?
Sure, yeah. This is Gary Ozanich with the Urban team. If we can go to slide number 10, please. So just to give some background on this measure, it really began as a discussion of the use of the CCDA scorecard as part of the standards and compliance domain, but it evolved into a larger discussion, a broader discussion of data completeness, including social determinants. Essentially, the task force in discussions, although this was submitted as a potential future measure, the task force had an interest and saw it as cross-cutting across all of the domains, and thus it's been accelerated to the discussion today. So in terms of the potential measure, essentially one measure, which is the data element percent of complete data, and so for each data element selected, the number of active patients with complete information for that data element, the denominator, the suggested denominator, the number of individuals with an encounter, and the definition of active patient. And I know that's still up for discussion as to how to define that across all the domains. So the reporting elements for consideration, obviously social determinants and identifiers and the like. The suggestion is for the developers to report numerators and denominators, not just percentages of completion, aggregation by developer, and potential subgroup by provider type. to potentially be reported out as quintiles, and the frequency of reporting and look-back period for numerators and denominators. Slide 11 are some questions that occurred during the discussion of that measure and of this domain, generally speaking. And with that, I'll turn it back to you, Sasha.
Yeah, so let's go back to slide 10 first to kind of talk through some of the observations that Zahid and I were able to make. I'll summarize, and Zahid, please do jump in as needed, and then we can talk about some of the questions that were posed here. So as we talk through this, each of the potential data elements for consideration, which are in over in the right-hand column there, I think would have to be kind of separately considered as a possible future measure. And there are some, you know, questions that we would have that would be unique to the particular data element under question. For example, in sort of a preliminary look across this, I think there's some of these that would probably need to be more clearly defined. So, for example, address might be better specified as, you know, specific address components or a zip code, for example. If we ask about gender, we might want to be more specific as to whether we mean administrative sex versus gender identity, et cetera. The sort of, as we would consider each of those individual data elements, I think our recommendation would be that the sort of use case for knowing the completeness of it be considered. Some of these, for example, Zahid and I were just speculating on what the use case is. For example, we speculated that the mother's maiden name is perhaps used in some patient matching scenarios. Otherwise, we weren't sure sort of what that meant in terms of the data completeness of capture of mother's maiden name. And others of them, you know, I think might have other purposes for understanding. If we know, for example, the frequency of population, of race, ethnicity, that, you know, might give more insights into other equity initiatives. The way in which systems handle some of these data elements would also have to be considered as we thought through specific ones. So as an example, it is, you know, not possible in the EHR I work with to have a patient with a patient record that does not have any name. It is like a required field to even create a record. So you're not going to find any patient records that don't have a last name populated, and by definition, this would be 100%. If there's sort of a question of like how many patients are unknown in terms of last name, that would have to be handled in a, you know, a different way that accounted for sort of the unique unknown patient naming practices that exist across different health systems. Other EHRs might have other required fields. I suspect name is a common one, but certain demographics might be sort of expected to populate a record. And so that would have to be kind of factored into how you would handle the analysis of any such data. Similarly, we talked about how EHRs may have a different approach to handling either defaults or encounter versus patient-level population. And so if a certain value is defaulted as unknown, for example, and then changed to a more specific value, we'd want to sort of make sure that we were clear in the way the measure was specified. You know, are we trying to measure any sort of population or a non-unknown value in the system? Similarly, if certain systems capture these at a patient level, and then Zahid was saying that some hospital systems may capture them at a hospitalization level, then we would need to be clear sort of what that meant in terms of the measurement complexity of sort of as written being at the patient level. That's kind of, I think, our big picture summary to sort of thinking through this. We weren't sure that to get to kind of some of the more specific elements over on the right, we didn't think a look back was necessary. We thought the most simplistic way would be just to check the denominator population for the numerator data element at the time the data was measured. The potential subgroup by client reported by quintiles was not clear to either of us. So we would either suggest making sure that was more clearly specified or removing it. Aggregation made sense, though, of course, we noted that it would not account for patients with multiple records across systems. I don't think you'd want it to, but we just wanted to highlight that for clarity. And then across here, this is called data quality and completeness, the proposal measures here are really just about the completeness element of data quality. It doesn't get at maybe some of the other aspects of data quality. Before we talk about the questions on the next slide, I'm going to kind of pause and invite Zahid or others in the group to chime in.
I think you, this is Zahid. Sasha, you summarized it perfectly, so I don't have anything else to add.
Great. I'm seeing Joe with his hand up. Joe, you want to go ahead? Okay, Joe, maybe...
I'm sorry. I couldn't get off the mute. I do have one question, and I don't know if this is the right time to ask it or not to ask it. Is you know, related to these measures that we're talking about, for this particular group of data elements, I didn't have a question related to, you know, whether they would be required or not required or whatever. But as we were talking about the components of, you know, how this data would be then made available or used. What is the expectation in terms of these data quality measures? You know, who would this data be made available to? I guess I'm not 100% clear on that through all the discussions that we've had. And talking when Sasha was talking about, like, what's typically required by an EHR system, and understanding what some of those components are. I know from a payer perspective, you know, some of these measures are things that we would like to see, and is that going to be integrated with the data that we're talking about here in terms of how that data is going to be shared or who that data would be made available to?
Can we just be on the same page, I guess, Cheryl, as you mean the data of, like, the aggregate count, right? So if this were a potential future measure, when it's collected in 2024 and we knew, you know, for the Epic system, there were, the denominator was, I don't know, 100,000 and the numerator was 99,900. I don't know. I'm just making up numbers and they probably didn't make sense. Sorry.
Right. But I was thinking about it, Sasha, because if you've got a measure that shows you've got, you know, I don't know, a certain percentage of data completed for, you know, social determinants of health and, you know, whether assigned by birth, sex, or what, how they identify, someone identifies, et cetera, all of that data, then that might be data that would be beneficial to be used for looking at equity measures. So is that data made available outside of the EHR system? Is it only to be reportable to, you know, HHS? Like, that's where I'm not quite 100% understanding how this data is used, and that's why I'm asking.
So the proposal, as I understand it, for this program is that as part of the certification process, products that undergo certification would submit these metrics on the frequency maybe that we recommend, right? We've been talking about annually. My guess is that then they would be made public along with other certification information that's, like, currently available today on ONC's Certified HIT Product List website, although I think all of that is still also subject to further design and consideration. So that's only going to give you...
That's what I'm asking, though, is are we going to be talking about that part, or are we only going to be talking about what's measured?
I think this current RFI is about the measures. Is that, can OSC or Urban Institute confirm?
This is Gary, and that's our understanding. I don't know, Seth, or somebody from ONC, would you care to chime in? I know Michael's not available today.
Yeah, hi, this is Seth Zinsky with ONC, and yes, that's right. So the current charge for this task force and the request for public feedback right now from Urban is just focused on the measures piece. The processes will be defined through rulemaking, and that would be the opportunity for public engagement and comment on those, that part of it.
Okay, thank you. That just helps me because then I understand a little bit better how my comments will, you know, where they'll go. Thank you.
And I think this is Ahid, just to add one point that I think Sasha did allude to in her summary. For instance, gender is going to be multiple fields in several EHRs, and in some it might be just one. So any precision of definition would be very important because they'd have to internally aggregate those numbers to get to the singular concept of gender that's envisioned here.
Thanks, Ed. So I'm seeing right now, Joe, still with your hand up. You're on.
Can you hear me now? This is Joe.
Yes, we can.
Yeah.
Please go ahead.
Oh, okay. Just real quick, I would recommend adding preferred language to this, and that way we would complete the Regal data set, or you know, for at least a basic social determinants.
This is Bryant. I totally agree with that. And just to chime in that I think one of the key use cases or motivations for these data quality we should acknowledge would be in it can't be reported to public health as a required field if it doesn't exist in the EHR system. So I think having that measure that there is completeness in there would enable us to emphasize that, yes, please, you need to report that. We know that 98% of EHRs have it or such once that aggregate information is made public in the rulemaking. Thank you. Sorry, I couldn't raise my hand.
That might, I guess, help us transition, Bryant, to the next slide and some of the questions, because it's not going to actually answer the question of EHRs have it. It's going to get at, do people capture it? The first question is sort of, to what extent do the provider-client processes drive the capture of this data? I think it's entirely user-driven, except for perhaps the scenarios where something is actually a requirement to have a record. So if you can only create a patient record if you have at least a last name, then we know every record will have a last name. But the extent to which something like, you know, race or ethnicity or preferred language would be captured is actually going to show the provider-client processes more than anything about the system.
Mm. I see.
Okay, I'm seeing.
If I could chime in, this is Stephen. Oh, sorry, you are doing hands.
Sorry. Steve Lane, if you have something directly related to that comment, please go ahead. But otherwise, I'll go to Steve Waldron first.
No, yeah, it was directly related. Sorry. I mean, I think that is true kind of across the board, Sasha, a lot of these things are really going to be driven by client behavior. And I think we just have to acknowledge that part of the reason for this whole program is so that purchasers of health IT can know what they're likely to get when they select a given vendor's product. And what they're likely to get is almost certainly reflected in how these products are implemented and used in the real world. So I think there are a number of these metrics that are going to be dependent on the behavior of the customer. And yet the vendor has something to do with how their customers, you know, purchase, install, implement, and support their own product. So I think if a given vendor product ends up with a bunch of customers that aren't collecting some bit of data, that's still relevant to other customers of that product, even though it wasn't necessarily directly under the control of the programmers who built the product. And I hope that made sense.
Yes. Thanks. I agree with you. I think most of the measures are extremely user or actually third party in some of them that we talked about with apps and so forth driven.
Okay, great. Thank you. And Steve Waldron next. Thanks for your patience. Or maybe not. Looks like he may have dropped off, but at least the hand is down. So
nope,
until he's back.
I'm here. Can you hear me okay now?
Yes, we can. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Sorry. So I agree with what's been said. I think for me, thinking about the data elements and the completeness piece, I don't think it's really all that helpful to think about completeness of an individual data element. Now, I think it should be reported that way. I think what's more important is, are there certain set of use cases? And I think there's been at least two of them that's been discussed several times. So one is patient matching, and the other is to really support robust reporting and understanding around the social determinants and equity. I think we should focus on maybe one or two of those, and those are the data elements we look at. And then I completely agree that this is what you can actually determine from this completeness. It's just kind of what's the state of the adoption of these type of data elements to being deployed, because you don't know, again, if it is processes inside these organizations on the clinical side, or as Sasha said, there's also ability for an EHR to demand or require certain data elements. So I think as you're a purchaser, you say like, oh, well, this was the highest completion. Well, but that may not be in a user-friendly way. It may be just in a mandated way. So from a purchase standpoint, I don't know that's going to be all that helpful either. So I think this is more of a, you know, high-level public reporting, understanding where the industry's at on some key issues like matching or social determinants or equity.
So this is Zahid. I think that of the elements listed, in terms of the first use case of patient matching, obviously there are many other ways to match patients, but of the ones that are listed here, the name, date of birth, and possibly a zip code might be the ones that would sort of be the most useful in that category. Mother's maiden name is, and Sasha and I both agreed, is almost never seen in these data captures. I don't know, like a fully qualified address would be additional element perhaps that could add to that. And I think on the health equity side, the three that were already mentioned, would be the ones that potentially would be useful.
So thinking through some of the additional questions here, just to kind of make sure that we consider all of them, when Zahid and I talked about distinctions between where the data was captured, I think that it would be impractical at this point. When I think about some of these pieces of information, they could come from a variety of places. So we'd need to clarify, for one, sort of what are the distinctions that we're attempting to make here, and what would we use that data for? If, a patient's race and ethnicity is entered by a registrar into an EHR or entered by a patient directly into a portal or interfaced from a different registration system in use at the health system, I don't know that, that is super significant, or if it is, we'd have to be much more clear about sort of what the intention is there. Our thinking was not to try to make that kind of distinction for the use cases we had in mind. The next two questions, to what extent does regional local characteristics affect this measure, and could duplicate measures be counted and distort this measure? We weren't totally sure we understood those questions. I don't know if someone from Urban Institute has more context and could maybe help us. Like, what duplicate measures are you thinking would be counted?
Sure. So, Scary, so just in terms of the information exchange, the focus is on interoperability, and there's a question about how the data quality and completeness relates to the interoperability between organizations. That was an attempt to capture that. And duplicate measures are really sort of was looking more at the possibility of having duplicate records for the same patient within some of the systems. So the assumption being that some developers have products that have a better opportunity to deal with duplications and other issues about data curation. Is that helpful?
You don't really mean measures, you mean records.
Records, that's what I mean, yeah.
So if we're totally by developer...
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, you're correct, records, yeah.
Okay. If we're totally by developer, so like to use me as an example, I have had appointments over the last 15 years at four different health systems in Madison. So there's going to be at least four records for Sasha, some of them might have this data about, you know, my race and ethnicity, for example, populated, and some of them might not. So when that's totaled, you're going to get like maybe three of four, for example, right, for the Sasha records. But I don't think there's any way to total by EHR and not have that when patients have multiple records.
It's Steve Waldron, and I think we would want it to show up as duplicates, right? Because we're really talking about interoperability. Those all systems need to have those data to be able to do matching across them to be able to do the interop. So I think we want them all to be reported.
I would agree. I think you would want all the Sasha records to be counted and to know, you know, to what extent they had the data populated. So I guess maybe the answer we're coming to is that duplicate records, you know, patients do have multiple records in different EHRs, but we would count each one. I don't think it would distort the measure.
We also, this is Zahid, we also, Sasha and I also talked about the duplication problem exists usually when you have measures at the patient level. At the encounter level, usually you don't have as much of the duplication problem if the measure is counting the encounters. But for these specific measures and the way they are stored in the EHR, I think an encounter-based measurement would be more problematic than the duplication of the patient-based measure.
I agree. And then the final question that was posed here, to what extent does the use of third-party applications or middleware shape the performance? You know, I think it would be really specific to what third-party applications or middleware were envisioned. Like I was talking about for populating race and ethnicity, maybe a registrar puts it into the system, the EHR directly. Maybe the patient enters it in a patient portal to self-report race and ethnicity. Maybe it's captured in a separate registration system and interfaced into the EHR. There could be any number of scenarios where different systems are in play, but I don't know that we could really answer that question without getting a little bit more specific.
This is somewhat similar to the second bullet, external
yes.
versus internal.
And I guess what we would propose for the group is that distinction be deferred. We don't think it's practical to be distinguishing by source or that would give a lot of meaningful insight at this point.
Yeah, Joe, just a quick comment on that. I mean, if you're looking strictly at EHRs, I've worked at organizations with different billing and registration systems that interface into the EHR. So data transfers over. But, I'm not sure there would be a whole lot of value in saying where did this actually come from. Patient versus another registration system portal or wherever. It seems like the objective is just to say, is the data in the EHR and is it complete? And just to comment on the maiden name, I agree that's probably one that's not going to be of high value. Working with registration in the past, you know, around quality measures, it's difficult enough to get them to put in the basic information. And they would probably, that would be one field that they would skip over. And we're always very reluctant to make required fields just because there's always scenarios where, you know, in emergency situations, patients en route, you know, on a, you know, transport, that they got to enter data quickly and they don't have the full data. And, you know, sometimes it might throughout the encounter never get completed because the patient's already in there and has an encounter number. So there are some challenges around this. It's not as easy as it seems, I guess I'm saying. Thank you.
Okay, so we're getting right at time where we want to switch over to the clinical care measures and turn over to Steve Lane and Abby Sears. A reminder that the shared doc is a place to add additional comments and to leave anything that we didn't have time to cover here. So hope that works for everybody. And if you have any challenges accessing that document, just let us know and we'll make sure we get you access. Sasha and Zahid, thank you so much for driving this conversation. I know we have a packed agenda here, so we'll make the transition now. And Steve and Abby, passed over to you.
Thanks. I think I'll start, Stephen, if that's okay, and then I'll hand it to you. I'm just going to review the changes that based off the last conversation. So, you know, absorbing the feedback from the last, from last week's discussion, if you go to the Google Doc, if you can pull up the shared Google Doc, I'm just going to go right off of that. Thank you. And then you go to the part where, yeah, the agreed upon changes. Okay, great. All we did there was try to incorporate the feedback into what we agreed upon. And I kind of want to just stop there and make sure that it should reflect what we said we all agreed what were things we wanted to move forward. The first one is that just that the metrics should be based on CCDA types, including but not limited summary of care documents. That we recommend and urge
Abby.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yes.
Let's go one by one. So Sasha included a comment there that she wasn't sure the word valid really added to that, and it could be confusing in trying to define what valid meant. So perhaps as we go through these, we could just strike that word to keep it simpler.
Yep. That sounds good. I just did that.
Okay.
It's hard to actually see the comments because I did so much editing. All right. So on the next one, I tried to change the language to recommend and urge CHIT to require EHR certification, expectations that will allow for the reporting to separate counts of documents received by PUSH.
And Abby, on that one, but by the way, your audio is breaking up a little, at least for me, so it's a little hard to understand you. But on that one, it wasn't clear to me why you felt that language was clearer than what we had. I don't think it's really up to the certified health IT to require EHR certification. It would be up to ONC. And I kind of liked the way we had it phrased before, this notion of signaling to industry, the intention to add a future metric. So I just was curious if you could explain why you thought this language was clearer.
What I thought I remembered from the conversation was that I was trying to go upstream, that if we were going to be signaling to the industry, signaling felt like it wasn't strong enough, that if we went all the way to CHIT and made the recommendation to actually make changes in the certification process, then we would be able to add the metric. But the challenge with adding the metric was underlying that the granularity of the data was not available. So I didn't think that so my thought was, if we really want to actually signal to the industry, it would be then the step of asking for more granularity at the certification process so that we actually can get to the separate counts, because that's what I thought I remembered as a challenge.
But wouldn't it be ONC that would require that?
I don't know. I mean, that's where I was going to the certification body. If that's ONC, I can change that language.
I think, so today, certification already includes documents received by push. The part that's outside of the scope of certification is querying, query-based document exchange. So is the concern that we would measure something outside the scope of certification at all, or that some systems might not differentiate? My sense is that
it's that some systems do not differentiate and have the level of granularity for the specific counts.
Okay.
And
I was worried that we were supposed to be sticking the measurements to things that were in the scope of certification.
Then I guess I would ask why we would be signaling that we want something different.
Well, just because it's valuable, right? I mean, it would be valuable to be able to measure document receipt by push and to differentiate that from document receipt by query.
Okay.
But I think you're right
that
it would presumably need to be added to certification before it could be added to reporting.
Signaling didn't feel like it. I didn't know what we were going to get from signaling, I guess. I was moving to what I thought I was doing was moving to language that would do more than signal, which would be request what we needed from the certification process to be able to get to what we thought was the best approach or to the level of reporting that we thought would be most helpful.
So how do people feel about how I modified that language there?
Can I just echo back to make sure I'm clear? We're not recommending that certification incorporate a whole new criterion for query-based exchange. But what we're saying is that certification would expect differentiation of whatever exchange types are supported. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
So that new language, is that still acceptable for this above-the-line list? Recommend ONC to incorporate EHR certification requirements that will allow for the reporting I would think we just say allow for separate counts of documents received by push and query. Is that okay?
I'm fine with those changes. I think the question is to the group, does that reflect what we were asking for?
Okay with that, Sasha?
I don't understand what reporting two separate counts means, but that's a grammar thing. Conceptually,
to separate, that's the verb.
Oh,
allowing for
gotcha.
Reporting to separate counts of documents received by push from those received by query or pull.
Okay.
Differentiate, would that be better?
Maybe, yeah.
Okay. All right. I don't want to spend too much time on this one. We have more meaty stuff to get to. Sorry, Abby. I hope it's okay that I'm jumping in the middle there.
Nope.
Oops.
Fine. Okay. So I think I'm going to move on then. Is that okay?
Yes.
Okay. So the next one is the definition of clinicians for the sake of this reporting includes all licensed independent practitioners as well as all nursing MA clinical support staff. It looks like there's a comment on that.
Yeah, Sasha had mentioned this when we were talking last time. There would be some mapping required.
Yeah, just that it would require build from each health system to map their user types to this. But if folks are comfortable with that, it was just kind of a note.
I remembered the note. I did not. It wasn't clear to me that people wanted a change in the language based off the conversation. So that's why I wrote it the way I did, or that's why I moved it up and didn't make a change.
Yeah, no, I think that we're just acknowledging that. I think we
okay.
can go on.
Okay. All right. The next one is viewing a document should be defined as having an open document display to a user, whether the display includes all or a subset of the data received, and regardless of whether the user scrolls through or clicks on any of the data in the document itself. I think that there didn't appear to be any concerns with that as it was written last week.
Okay.
I deleted a cross-cutting overarching expectation because I, or no, did you delete that, Stephen?
I don't know, but I think Sasha had a comment on it. Concept of updating a document is not in certification. Yeah, I think we're comfortable leaving that out.
Yeah, that's fine. All right, going down to the ones that needed further discussion then.
Okay.
What we
go ahead.
Well, I just want to reflect the conversation that was had last week, which is why I made the changes on this one. On this first one, which is the metric should count each received document once and avoid recounting. What I remembered the conversation being was to actually make an overarching comment across the whole set of domains asking to only count once. Does that reflect what we came to last week?
My recollection is that Sasha, you know, you pointed out the different vendors do this differently, and it would be very difficult to do this in a way that was going to accurately differentiate the different behaviors of different vendors, so I think we just decided to leave it out.
That was my memory, too, or defer it to some future consideration.
Okay. I know that was your opinion, Sasha. It wasn't clear to me from the discussion that everyone agreed. So I wasn't, that's why I left it down there for continued further discussion. My recollection of the conversation was that we didn't get a final decision on it.
But, so personally, I'd recommend that we just drop it at this point because it's going to be really hard to differentiate. Does anyone disagree with that? Do you disagree with that, Abby?
No, okay. I don't disagree. Okay, then we can cut that one. All right, so that moves us to, so we're basically, I think, let me see, I want to get in here and then I want to delete that. So we're deleting this. Right.
Wait, no.
Talking about the one above.
Yeah, no, don't delete that one. Undo that.
Okay. All right. Okay. I just figure out how to undo.
It's that back arrow in the upper left.
Okay. Yeah, got it. Thanks. Okay. So then that moves us to the next one, which is we're recommending that this statement be added to the global expectations across all the domains. A cross-cutting, overarching expectation for all reporting should include activity log reports by automatically generated and transmitted from provider systems at specified intervals.
And I think the discussion on this one was that this really isn't about the metrics itself. It's more about the process, which I don't think is really what we've been asked to comment on so much. And also, I think Sasha's point that this was very prescriptive and the different vendors, based on how they build their systems, might have, you know, different ways that would be more efficient in specific situations. So I think I came away from our last discussion just feeling like this was beyond the scope of what we were asked to do.
I think we could make a cross-cutting expectation that we want to prioritize minimal provider burden, but I don't think we can be as prescriptive as this is currently worded, given the differences in EHR deployment models.
And I think,
yeah,
you know,
okay.
we've got the minimized burden sort of as an overarching theme to start with, so I don't know that we need to add to this specifically.
Then we could delete that whole thing, I think. If we're narrowing it burden, and that's already an overarching consideration, then we would delete the whole thing.
Anyone disagree? Yeah, I think so. Now you can delete it.
Okay. So then moving down, the next one, I deleted this one. Activity log report should be automatically generated because it was part of the earlier one. And it was part of the that comment around making a comment around the overall global expectations for everything. That's how I remembered the conversation from last week. And
agreed.
It looks like, yeah. Okay. All right, the next one is when possible metrics should be reported at the product level, ambulatory, inpatient, or ED product, not at the vendor level, as products from the same developer may have different functionality and performances. The denominator should be used to differentiate the product type and will replace health IT. That's a consolidation of a lot of discussion that I was trying to condense both your comments, Stephen, in the document, as well as Sasha's comments. And I might not have reflected landed.
Yeah, so, and Sasha made the point, you know, both verbally and in the document, you know, that an integrated product like Epic would have a difficult time differentiating these things. And I added to that that acknowledging that Epic perhaps could not differentiate at the product level. There may be other vendors with distinct products used by different customer bases, such as vendors who own multiple ambulatory EHRs that they've obtained by acquisition, where here it would be important for them to report at the product level because the two products may behave very differently in this regard. And if they rolled up together to the vendor level, you would miss that differentiation. So that's why I added the words when possible to the front of this first sentence.
If we had the denominator that was product domain specific, I think it is possible to differentiate the denominator if that's based on like patients who have a visit, right? But then we'd have to write separate denominators. So we'd have like one denominator for inpatient products, which was like patients who have an inpatient admission, and one denominator for ambulatory products, which would be like patients who have a visit. And then the numerator might be duplicative, right? Because if you, you know, did an action that isn't visit specific, view a patient portal or receive a CCDA document, that might be counted in both if a patient has both an office visit and an admission. Is that kind of what we're thinking?
So I think there's sort of two different concepts, right? So that's why I separated them out into two different bullets. So let's sort of try to deal with them separately. I think that this notion of being able to separate at the product level where that is logically possible has value. And I'd just like to sort of see if anybody disagrees with that.
No, I actually agree with that.
Okay, and then I think separate from that is this notion of differentiating the denominator by product type, such as you said, Sasha, ambulatory versus inpatient EHRs. I think that also makes sense. But as you say, in the situation of Epic, where you've got customers that have installed both, there may be some sort of overlap there. So I think this one might be a little more problematic, but again, curious what other people think. Sasha, are you comfortable with the way that's phrased now?
I think the first bullet is fine, I guess, with the understanding that in some cases it's not going to be possible. The second
right.
bullet, I think the first part of it makes sense to me. I'm not sure what the "and will replace Health IT" part means.
Yeah, it meant that in the language in the denominator that actually says "will Health IT." So we suggested that the denominator actually differentiate by product, but the definition of the denominator is Health IT. So we would have to change that. So I was just being clear on that.
Oh, so instead of the denominator being the number of records received using Health IT, you would be saying like
right.
the number of records received using an ambulatory product or an inpatient product?
It would be to differentiate by product of Health IT. That's what I meant by that.
Okay, thank you. I'm looking at the denominator now. That makes sense. If we're making an encounter-based denominator, I think it's possible to differentiate. I don't think it's possible to differentiate receipt of summary of care by domain, because that is not a domain-specific action.
Especially once we start incorporating push. You know, documents
yes.
received by push. So I think this does become problematic.
Yep.
So if no one disagrees, I'm going to take, you know, this one bullet, when possible metrics should be, and move it above the line. Is that all right with everyone? Anyone disagree?
No, Steve, I agree.
Okay, thank you. All right, you want to go on to the reporting period, Abby?
Yeah, the reporting period should align with the reporting period of the other metrics and reflect any view of documents received during that time period. There was a lot of discussion last week about what time period are we looking at, and so I put in the comment saying that it should reflect the same time period to reduce the burden of the reporting, and the look-back period or the period would be for the period that the reporting period actually lasts. What are people's thoughts on that?
And I added a comment in the document that measuring views of documents received during the measurement period could limit the intensity of analysis required by the alternate approach of measuring views of any outside document received. Also, timely viewing of recently received data is likely to have a greater impact on care than review of older documents. So I think there are a couple of good reasons to limit this to documents viewed that were received during the reporting period. Anyone disagree?
The receiving date doesn't necessarily reflect the age of the document. You may receive a document that's 10 years old, and if it's not viewed, is that really a problem?
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true, Brian. And there's a certain, you know, amount of slop in any of these metrics. I think you're right, but I still think it's valid, and I still think it's valid to use to compare
products.
If it's
a simpler, agree. If for simplicity chips, it decreases the complexity, that's acceptable.
I think what we're saying is that the number of documents in the denominator that are viewed during the reporting period, right? Because the denominator is already the ones received in that
yes.
window. I agree that's simpler, and we should be clear.
So can I move this one above the line? It may warrant a little bit of fine-tuning on the language.
Right. The massaging of the language can happen. I can work on that later.
Okay. Let me move it, and you keep going, Abby.
Okay. Request future reporting to include how often was data parsed and viewed separately from the received document as defined by the definition and certification language. For example, currently it's continuity of care document, referral note, and inpatient setting only. Inpatient setting only is the discharge summary. So that was a consolidation of a lot of discussion and comments. How does this read now?
So I added a comment to this one, Abby, and I felt that the language at the end, the kind of care document, referral note, et cetera, really wasn't needed because we've already up above suggested that any received CCDA document would be counted.
That's fine from my standpoint. The intent of it, are people comfortable with the intent?
I don't know that I understand what it means as defined by the definition and certification language.
Related to the data parsed. The parsed would be only the data that is already defined in the certification language.
So I actually added that. I added that down below a little bit more clearly. So maybe let's scroll down to the bullet that says in lieu of. Sorry, Abby, I did this after you had your way with it. So I said in lieu of the terms parse and integrate, consider referencing and utilizing the existing certification criteria for incorporation of received outside data. And then I gave the reference. And they say incorporation means to electronically process structured information from another source such that it is combined in structured form with information maintained by Health IT and is subsequently available to use within the Health IT system by a user. So I think, and this was Sasha's suggestion, to insofar as possible, reference the existing certification criteria. And Gary, I'd be curious about your view on this because, of course, you know, you guys authored the parse and integrate language. I'm wondering if there was a reason that you chose different terminology than that which was already used in certification.
No. Actually, it's just a language that was adopted in the discussion with the stakeholders. Really did not attempt to differentiate it. It's just a
I think part of that may have been my fault when I was a stakeholder.
Yeah, I think one of the other challenges is that CMS, in their measures of incorporation, has not really looking at maybe what we're thinking of here in ONC's definition or in the parsing sense, because their measures historically in meaningful use have been looking more at like incorporation of a document into a particular patient's record, like from a mailbox to a record. And then they've seen in CMS's measures usually reconciliation as something that would happen after incorporation. And so the sort of structured sort of combining with local data is more of the incorporation, more of the reconciliation activity than it is, you know, the sort of an incorporation piece. I think personally the terms are super confusingly used in current state. Parsing is more intuitive to me, maybe because it doesn't have this confusing double usage across CMS and ONC today. But I think we would want to be clear what we meant. And parsing is not defined in certification. So from like a personal perspective, I maybe like you, Stephen, would find parsing more clear as to what is intended here. But the certification language doesn't talk about parsing at all. It talks about incorporation and reconciliation. And ONC's language in certification is not totally consistent in my mind with how CMS has incorporated those into meaningful use measures in the past, some of which are now retired.
So are you suggesting we not even wade into this swamp and leave it at parse and integrate, or do you like my specification?
I think if what we mean is parse and integrate, we should define that ourselves for this purpose to say that would include reconciliation as defined in certification, but also the non-reconciliation actions that I think we're intuitively perceiving in parsing. so that that could be consistently implemented across systems as they designed this measure.
And do you think it's realistic that we could do that in the time available, including this morning?
I don't, that's a good question.
Sounds like we're going to need to leave this for another day. I love the language you were using, Sasha, and perhaps you could try tossing that in the document, and we could look at it if we have a chance at a subsequent meeting or offline.
Yeah, I can try to do a pass-through. I see the blue things that you've, well, they're blue to me in the Google Doc. I see the language that you've added. I'll try to kind of add on to that.
Wonderful. Okay. How many more minutes do we have for this? I think that we
got about
we never
minutes.
Did.
We have about 2 minutes left, Steve and Abby.
Okay, well, we got through what we got through last week. We still have the things that we haven't touched from last week. So let's see.
I think the third party apps one down at the bottom, since we didn't get to that, can we jump to there? Because I think it's pretty non-controversial.
Yeah.
Except for the there's controversial one. Yeah, yeah, thanks, Sasha. Do you want to go through that, Abby, real quick?
Sure. Recommendations for further discussion are report separately on app registration versus app use, if possible. And I think, Sasha, you had some comments related to that.
So this is actually a comment that came out of an EHRA discussion because the processes for registration of patient apps and the processes for registration of clinician apps is, for in EHRA discussion, often handled differently. So we weren't sure that the sort of measure of having a denominator of clinician apps registered was going to be practical, and none of us were certain about it, so we took it as a further follow-up. This is truly a question, not like a statement from me. I do think registration and use are different, so those can be differentiated. Whether registration makes a reasonable denominator, I think, is the open question we were doing some follow-up on within EHRA.
You know, I think that the point of registration versus use is really important, and I think that the more that we can articulate the use, the better that this is going to be. Because registering, I think we all register on apps and never use them, and I don't think that reflects almost anything, frankly.
Yeah, I totally
well,
agree.
Registration in the app world is actually not a thing that a user does. It's like, so with Fire, the app has to register with the sort of server. I'm mangling all the vocabulary here. Apologies to Fire experts. But so like in a patient-facing app world, a patient-facing app, before it could be used by any patient in conjunction with an EHR, has to register with the server to be available. And so the EHR developer maintains the registration process and knows which apps have registered because they've filed with the EHR developer. And then after registration, it's available to be used at a particular EHR deployment site by a particular patient who selected that app. The registration action the EHR developer would know about from a patient app perspective, and then the usage would be reported by the health system because they would have that in their audit log. Clinician-facing applications are not necessarily registered with the EHR developer in the same way patient-facing applications are. That was what we had this open question about here. But the app registration would not be about something someone was doing in the app. That would be about the app developer sort of signing up their app to be used with a particular EHR.
So my suggestion is that we would suggest that the metrics report on the use of clinician-facing apps rather than their registration.
Sounds good. I'm on board.
Or even the activation of it within the provider system. I think the registration is not going to tell us much of anything, but I think I don't think we're trying to have the providers do any reporting based off their use of the apps. So something in between might actually be the activation of the apps within the provider's system, which might tell us at least something more than registration.
What's the difference between activation and use?
Well, I mean, activation means you installed it. Use means I used it. I mean, to me,
right.
That's very different.
Is there a system thing that would know it's activated if there isn't? Like, I guess I'm thinking use I know is in the audit trail. What would be the indicator that something is active in the EHR when the active thing is the app?
I mean, wouldn't the EHR know that an app had been installed?
Well,
right.
You would know if it was registered, and you would know if it was used. I don't know what installation means in an app context when you're doing FHIR.
So maybe what we could do, I know we're 3 minutes over time. Why don't we leave a comment there that we need to clarify on installation, activation, implementation, whatever the other words are appropriately there, so we can flag it. I want to make sure we leave enough time for Ken and Jim to jump into standards adoption and conformance measures.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for the time.
Stephen, Abby, thank you for all the hard work on that. Sasha, all the great comments there. Ken and Jim, over to you. And I know, Ken, you have some slides that you want to present, but why don't we get the overview of the measures first.
Okay, slide 16, please. And I'll do this very quickly. So the motivation of the measures is to provide a measure of the use of FHIR profiles, which can help guide updates to the U.S. core and provide insights into the volume and types of data being used by apps. Second, to assess the implementation of health IT provisions of cures by providing insight into the usage of bulk FHIR overall and for different use cases. So the draft measures are designed to address the following questions: what FHIR and non-core FHIR core and non-core profiles are requested by providers and consumers when they use the apps, and how frequently are bulk FHIR transactions occurring overall and by type. Next slide, please. And for the clinician-facing and patient-facing apps, these are the suggested measures. I know Ken and Jim are going to go into them, so I won't go into them now. And then the third measure concerns bulk FHIR. So with that, Ken and Jim, I'll turn it over to you.
Thanks. Ken, Jim, before you jump in, so we're going to do a slight adjustment to the agenda here, and apologies for those on the public comment, but we're going to move that to 11:25 as opposed to 11:20 so that we can get a few extra minutes here. Ken and Jim, over to you.
Fantastic. Two questions. Can you hear me, and can you see my slides?
We can hear you, and slides are now up.
Fantastic. So thank you kindly to the ONC, to the HITAC committee, to the task force chairs for this opportunity to present. I'll be presenting work that Jim Giergis and I, along with Bill Gregg, and input from several members of the standards community have given input into. Most here. Let's see. There we go. So hold on. This is not working so well. Hold on for 1 second.
While Ken's doing that, this is Bryant. If I'm on phone only, will these slides be distributed afterwards?
Okay, hold on. Wow, this really, okay, can you still see my slides?
I currently cannot. I cannot.
Okay. Wow. This Adobe
For the slide share question, we will try and get the slides out to everybody.
Yeah. Okay. Hold on. Let me try this again. How about now?
Yep, we can see him now.
Okay. I'm just going to use this in this mode to keep it safe. So the objectives, so the objectives today, we would like to give ONC the data they need to react to the real-world evolution of health information technology under 21st century cures, and to monitor and advance a competitive, market-driven, apps-based information economy, a data-driven health system where EHR-derived population data sets are readily obtainable and exchangeable, and an affordable information economy. So we therefore believe that it's important to collect across different denominators and numerators to yield a range of metrics that can be mixed and matched as the ecosystem evolves. So we have taken the excellent start that the Urban Institute gave us with metrics across clinician-facing apps, patient-facing apps, and the bulk fire access API-based ecosystem, and provided somewhat more granularity in our suggestions. So for clinician-facing apps, and what you'll see is a repeat of this structure and theme across clinician-facing, patient-facing, and bulk fire apps. Let's begin at the bottom of the slide with the denominators. This gets at some of the conversation, which I found very useful in the previous section, session about app registration. Some of those questions that were raised just before this presentation began, I think are important and worth answering with some perhaps deeper dives, and I'll refer to those in some of the questions at the end of this slide deck. One way to begin to look at how used these apps are is to look at the number of providers with at least one EHR session in the period. So if we're looking at activity within an apps ecosystem, one important denominator is how many docs does this apply to. Another is how many patients are in that ecosystem, perhaps by site or perhaps across a vendor product. What is the count of EHR documented encounters in the period? I know that metrics for encounters have been discussed in prior sessions, and I don't think there's anything unique about these metrics. We're certainly comfortable looking at a universal definition across all these metrics and domains for encounters. And then it may at times be important to look at a per site usage. And I'll just note that per site may vary. So Jim gave an excellent example of DB Motion installation at HCA, which is a single installation, but that covers all the HCA hospitals. So is that a site, even though it's very many hospitals? And also, what resolution can developers ascertain now, and what can we expect them to be able to ascertain in the future in terms of parsing, for example, by site? So looking at this, so what you'll see is that the denominators are very similar across these metrics. Let's look at the numerators now. So for clinician-facing endpoints, the total number of API calls by FHIR version and by resource type. So one way to look at this is are these clinician-facing endpoints exposing data according to which FHIR version, and how much data is moving in an API call by resource type. And I think resource type here is synonymous with what is meant in the Urban Institute metrics by the term profile. I believe that resource type is, we're referring, I believe, to the same thing that Urban Institute is referring to in profiles. Sorry for the jumpy slide. For clinician-facing endpoints, total number of creates and updates by FHIR version and resource type. This refers to the ability to write back into the electronic medical record, something many, many stakeholders since the earliest days of the Smart on FHIR project have asked for the write back. It's more complicated. It's a less evolved part of the ecosystem, but one which could be monitored through the EHR reporting system. Next bullet, for clinician-facing endpoints, total volume of data transferred in gigabytes and count of FHIR resources transferred by FHIR version and by resource type. So now we're getting a sense for how much data is moving around into clinician-facing apps. And then for clinician-facing endpoints, the count of, and this gets to the conversation that was just happening, and I think it's worth resolving uniformly across these different metrics. For clinician-facing endpoints, the count of Smart on FHIR apps with at least one launch. For clinician-facing endpoints, the total count of Smart on FHIR app launches. So this begins to get us at the apps and how regularly they are used. Now let's look at patient-facing, and you'll see a lot of analogy here. So the denominators are very similar, except we're not focused on the numbers of clinicians for the patient-facing side. So this will sound very familiar, but I will go through it. For patient-facing endpoints, total number of API calls by FHIR version and resource type. For patient-facing endpoints, total number of creates updates by FHIR version and resource type. That's the write-back. Total volume of data transferred, again, and count of FHIR resources transferred by FHIR version and resource type. For patient-facing endpoints, count of Smart on FHIR apps with at least one launch and count of Smart on FHIR app launches. Again, getting at that very important distinction, which was articulately discussed before, between whether you're actually using these apps. And the denominators, again, we've reviewed. Bulk data, whereby we expect that there will be different levels of usage, and this here we are looking at in the denominators, the count of EHR documented encounters in the period, in denominators per site, and in denominators potentially by user type. Here we're going to have different users potentially accessing these bulk FHIR endpoints, and it would be very, very interesting to know the categories of those users to understand how data are moving around the health system. Let's look at the numerators. For bulk data endpoints, total number of API calls by FHIR version and resource type, total number of creates and updates by FHIR version and resource type, write back. That one we may not need as much in the bulk FHIR world. There may not be much write back going on. For bulk FHIR endpoints, total volume of data transferred, gigabytes, and count of FHIR resources transferred by FHIR version and resource type. And then there's another idea that we're introducing here, which is the number of registered smart backend services apps with at least one API request. These are apps that are connecting on the back end of the electronic medical record and may also access bulk FHIR data. Next slide is, and this is a category that was not yet in the Urban Institute metrics, but is an important additional ONC requirement, maturing as a certification requirement 1 year after the other interoperabilities. and that's the electronic health information export. This is the whole electronic medical record exported either for a patient, for her data, or for an entire, or for a provider. So the whole ex-hospital's data set out of the one vendor product, presumably to be uploaded into another vendor product or potentially into an analytic environment. That's a requirement. And so I think a very interesting thing to monitor how this is happening. It also relates to HIPAA right of access for patients requesting their own EHI. So number of, so the denominator here is per number of sites, and the numerator are number of individual patient EHI export requests processed, those initiated by patient, those initiated by hospital staff, and then the number of EHI exports, full data exports requests, also costs. I know we're coming up on time, but I'm coming up also on finishing. We also are proposing that we understand the range of apps by getting counts and even lists of apps by the name of the app. The apps using Smart on, or perhaps a unique app ID. Counts and lists of apps using the Smart on Fire API and vendor-associated app galleries. Counts and lists of apps not using the Smart on Fire API are apps using these standards. Using counts and lists of apps using the Smart on Fire API plus additional APIs, or counts and lists of apps with at least one launch in the measure period registered for Smart on Fire write permissions, are apps using the write APIs, WRITE for anyone who's just on the phone. Other questions, are vendors certifying their core products, e.g. Bulk Fire, bolt-on products? Can we get metadata on apps with unique identifier for each app? Can vendors resolve API calls by site? What are the what data are visible to EHR vendors currently? Does an EHR vendor typically, for example, even know how many apps are registered? How are these metrics complemented by mandated reporting requirements? And I'm going to hold it right there at time.
Perfect. Thanks, Ken. And apologies to everybody. I failed to ask Ken to make those slides a little bit bigger, but we'll make sure those get distributed. We're right at time for public comment, which I want to make sure we respect. So we'll go ahead and do that, and then hopefully we'll have 2 or 3 minutes to at least get some discussion started.
All right. Thank you, Raj. Operator, can we open up the line for public comments?
Yes. If you would like to make a comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your line from the queue. And for participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up the handset before pressing the star keys. One moment while we pull for comments.
All right, thank you. And while we're waiting, I just want to remind everybody that we'll reconvene our task force meeting next Thursday, August 19th, at the same time, 10 o'clock Eastern time. Operator, do we have any public comments?
There are no comments at this time.
All right, thank you. Raj?
Great, thanks. We're going to use every minute we have, so let's jump in to see if there are any questions or comments for Jim and Ken. Sasha, seeing your hand up?
Yeah. Ken, thanks. I do think a lot of what you've suggested clarifies some of the vocabulary confusion we were having when talking about API measures, and I agree it would be helpful to be consistent across all of the related measurements. I think one of my other thoughts, and I'd be happy to add comments if we could get this in a format that we can have access to offline, but would be that a variety of these measures are outside the scope of certification. For example, there's no certification requirement to have an app gallery at all. And so I think we'd want to probably prioritize by the ones that would be within the scope of all the certified products participating in the reporting program.
Yes, and from that perspective, if EHR vendors are meeting certification requirements through, for example, an app gallery, how would you recommend monitoring that activity?
What certification requirement would you see as being met by an app gallery?
For example, supporting the clinician ability to connect an app to the Fire API.
Not all the, it's Jim Gerges here, not all the apps in an app gallery would necessarily use a Fire API. Is that correct? Is that what you're getting at? And these measures are meant to monitor the use of these APIs on Fire. Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah, I guess, you know, I think of app galleries as supplemental to the certification requirements. I don't see the overlap, and Ken, maybe we need to talk further. But in my mind, they're separate, and so I would focus on the certification components.
We'll certainly look at that, and I'm certainly interested to dig in and sort out what is most consistent with the certification requirements.
Okay, we'll take a quick question from Steve Lane, and then we're going to wrap things up.
Yeah, thanks. I just wanted to say, can we please get the specific recommendations that were presented added to the shared Google Doc so that we can look at them and wordsmith them as we've been doing with the others? Great presentation. Thank you, Jim and Ken, for putting this together. Clearly, nobody understands this stuff better than Ken. But we do want to kind of bring it down to a level where we can turn this into specific recommendations.
Yeah, great point. We'll absolutely do that. So we'll make sure those get out of the shared Google Doc. I'd ask everybody once again to jump in this week to look at those and to comment on the other ones. And then we'll continue the discussion next week. So we'll make sure we have some time on the agenda for next Thursday to walk through these in some more detail and get feedback. With that, we're right at time, and I want to be very respectful of everybody's time. Thank you to everybody that presented today and took the time to really think through what was being presented and the great conversation. And thanks to everybody for jumping on this call to make sure that we can keep moving through these. And as Mike Berry mentioned, next Thursday, same time, same place. Thank everybody very much.